Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Acclaimed author Kate Russo's latest Until Allison is a literary thriller that is at once about class, gender, and the arbitrary nature of violence. When Allison, a prominent figure in the small town of Waterbury, Maine, is found dead in Pleasant Pond, the community is shaken. The location is hauntingly familiar. It's the very place where Allison and Rachel Nardelli, once close friends turned childhood rivals, last parted ways in eighth grade. For Rachel, the discovery is far more personal. She had seen Allison the night she died. Their exchange was tense, marked by unresolved bitterness and a moment of carelessness Rachel can't take back. By morning, Allison had vanished. Haunted by guilt and fractured memories, Rachel joins her high school journalism team in an effort to uncover the truth. Kate Russo's previous novel was Superhost. She grew up in Maine and now divides her time between there and the United Kingdom, where she is also an exhibiting artist. It's a great pleasure to welcome Kate Russo to this week's book show.
Oh, I'm so excited to be back.
This is a different book than Superhost. What brought you to this thriller aspect of going in that direction?
Superhost was the book I wanted to write. And this is the book I had to write. And I think that's kind of the difference between them. This one's been in my mind for a very long time, pretty much since I graduated from college. I've been trying to figure out a way to tell this story and also tried to figure out a way not to tell this story, but it kept coming back. So I felt like the only way to do it was to just sit down and write it, which is what I started doing in the pandemic. It's true. It's very different from Superhost. It's not rooted in comedy the way Superhost was. But I'd like to think there are still some funny moments in this book. But it started out as a character study. It started out as a study of these two girls and what they meant to each other, and sort of built itself into a thriller as I was going along.
I think one of the things you realize while you're reading this book is about the two women you're writing about, that a lot can happen in a very short period of time. And while it may not be that much on the calendar, that idea from high school to graduating from college can be a lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was, you know, it's been 22 years since I graduated from college. But when I think back to the fact that there was only 8 years between finishing junior high and graduating college, you realize just how close the ages of 14 and 22 really are to each other, and how much actually you feel at the time that it's a lifetime because you haven't been alive that long. But really, Rachel in particular remembers, and in her early 20s is still incredibly haunted by who she was when she was 14.
What do you think brings on that being haunted? Because I mean, some of us can look back at almost any aspect of our life and feel some remorse or regret of we could have been better human beings. What is it about Rachel, you think, that has her look back and feel that way?
I think it's because she doesn't know who she is. And she's in college and she feels that everyone around her does know who they are. She's wrong about that, but she feels that everybody around her has a much stronger sense of self. And when Allison dies, I think she realizes just how little she knows herself. There's a couple of epiphanies in the book about sort of realizing that she doesn't really have friends and she doesn't know how to make friends, and that she's graduating from college with nobody really knowing her, principally herself. And I think that's where the haunting begins, is thinking about, okay, well, who am I and why am I the way I am?
That idea of why am I the way I am permeates the book. And I guess it permeates it for Allison as well, but certainly it's Rachel that we spend more time with. And you get the idea that it would, at least this was my reading of it, that it would always be difficult for Rachel to find a version of herself that seemed worthy.
Yeah. And I think that she's probably, you know, always going to be that way to a certain extent, as I think some people are, you know, I've certainly felt that way in my own life, that you just, you know, there's imposter syndrome, there's not knowing who you are, there's wanting to be the best version of yourself. And you can get really, really muddled with all of it. And it really matters to Rachel that she's made mistakes. But she's sort of still too cowardly at this point in her life to figure out how to fix them. But I'm hopeful for her that as life goes on, she will learn how to make up for the things that she felt she did wrong. But the difficulty is that she feels she can't do that with Allison because Allison is gone. So she's stuck on that.
So let us talk about Allison for a moment. This is a young woman who has some wealth and mm-hmm. and is prominent in yeah. the community, and yet has difficulty finding friends and making friends and keeping friends. And all of this plays out in this particular story, but there is a class aspect to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that the class is kind of the bedrock of this book. It's really what drives the cruelty in this book. And I think it's really the first thing that you understand when you're younger that makes you different from everyone around you. And I mean, I grew up in a household where I was very much taught about class early. My parents wanted me to understand that not everybody's family had the same amount of money, and some people can't afford certain things, whereas other people, you know, might spend too much. And so I felt very, very aware of this. And I feel that Rachel's parents do the same. They really, really want her to know that she is taken care of, but they are not wealthy, and that Allison comes from a very wealthy background. But similarly, there are kids who don't have enough, don't have nearly enough. And so Rachel's in that mix of sort of having this adult understanding that she's not really ready for, that overwhelms her. And the other kids don't have a nuanced understanding of it. And it's a town, and I grew up in a similar town where not only could you not be too poor, you also couldn't be too rich. You had to be in this sort of very specific realm of the middle class, because, you know, that you were either, a poor kid, which was abhorrent, or you were a rich kid, which meant that everybody was jealous of you, which meant that they didn't like you. And so there was cruelty flying in all directions over things that 14-year-olds have absolutely no control over.
In talking about that, your father, Richard Russo, writes quite a great deal about this in his fiction, but his latest book, Life and Art, which I interviewed him for just a week or so before I read your novel.
Yeah.
It is fascinating because he is looking at growing up in Gloversville, New York, and that feeling of rich and poor and where class comes in. And I just think it's interesting how you talked about both your parents, the impact they had on you on that subject, but that comes from real world experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that happened with this book is, and I feel a great kinship to both Rachel and Allison, and I think that has a lot to do with my own upbringing, in the sense that, you know, my dad was teaching part-time, hadn't published a book when I was very, very young. And by the time I was in junior high, Nobody's Fool was being made into a movie. And that was quite an ostracizing experience for me as a 13, 14-year-old. And so I feel as though I've kind of experienced both ends of the spectrum in terms of, you know, living in a tiny apartment when I was young, and then having, you know, this nice house in Maine as I got older. And it's a lived experience, and I don't really know that many people that share it.
And the idea that your parents wanted to keep you grounded on it,
yes,
right? Of not like don't.
Yeah.
don't get too carried away.
Yeah, no, I can't overstate that enough. I don't think that there's been any point in my family's life where they felt that they were anything other than sort of working middle class, and that's everybody's mentality.
Yeah. When you were working on this book, Was it always, because you're telling it, obviously Allison is deceased, but are you telling the story of both women, or is it in your mind, is it really Rachel's story?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question, because I essentially pose it in the book when Rachel has, you know, she's having her short story critiqued, and Allison's in the same class, and Rachel's written a story about the two of them, and Allison asks her, well, whose story is this? And Rachel sort of has to admit that she doesn't really know. And I think at the end of the day, it's Rachel's story. It's Rachel's story about, you know, it's her coming of age story. I think if Allison could tell the story, she would tell it completely differently.
And that's fascinating, because obviously what happens happens, but it's because of the way they live their life. And also that even because Allison comes from some wealth, feels just completely ostracized.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but she's also this incredibly, you know, she just refuses not to, you know, she's going to be herself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how much she's bullied. She has this kind of real drive to be who she is. And maybe that's coming from a family that supports and loves her, or maybe it's the privilege that's inherent in her life, but she chooses to be herself. She chooses not to change despite all of the bullying that she's getting. And that makes Rachel just jealous and angry, because she doesn't feel like she has that option, which again is, of course, a lie she's telling herself.
Allison has this problem with a lot of her peers.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I think the question for the reader is, because I feel like I don't know the answer to it, is just how much is she bringing a certain amount of her ostracization on herself? You know, I mean, she doesn't deserve a lot of the bullying she gets. Nobody does. But at the same time, she doesn't seem to know how to make herself available to other people. You know, I think she expects people to meet her on her level. And I think she doesn't understand her own wealth. She doesn't understand that buying people things isn't necessarily the same as being friends with somebody.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a moment in the book where both Allison's parents and Rachel's parents meet up,
mm-hmm.
and they're having a conversation with how Allison is being treated by Rachel and other students at the school. And it's a real eye opener for both sets of parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I really it's awkward as hell, but I really
yeah.
enjoyed that moment
yeah.
of reading, because it's so real and very true as to just how hard that is to put your finger on.
Yeah, that's one of my absolute favorite scenes in the book that I worked on really, really hard, because Rachel's parents and Allison's parents are so different in so
Right.
many ways, but they needed to share this space, and they wanted the same thing. And of course, you know, Rachel's parents are ashamed of what their daughter has done. Allison's parents are, I think, enormously gracious considering the situation, but they're doing it in this massive house, you know, that Allison's parents own, and it's clear the class distinction.
And it's the father who is very clear that he wants to come to some understanding, but he's also the one who's rolling his eyes a bit.
Yeah, and Allison's father is kind of throwing his hands up in the air to some extent and saying, well, it doesn't matter, I'm going to send her to private school next year anyway.
Yeah.
And in that, I mean, how can Rachel's family take that as anything other than insulting?
And it's something that comes back of there's always this out, and also as you write the story, Allison doesn't leave right away, which is another aspect to it of, because I think you even say in the book, it's like, okay, well, it's September. I mean, you still have to get to June, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so she takes some time off, and I think, you know, she ends up sort of, yeah, the school works out a schedule whereby she's not sort of being in places where she could easily be bullied. But yeah, I mean, when you're 13, the time between September and June, I mean, that's enormous.
I also enjoyed that aspect of that the school's way of dealing with her feeling ostracized was to lock her up in a library. I mean, that's a real thing. That
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely is.
artistic license there, but Kate Russo is our guest. The name of the new novel is Until Allison. So my understanding is that if there is any connection between your story and this story, is that you were someone who was interested initially in journalism.
Yes. So when I was in college, I was the news editor of my college paper, thinking I might go on to study journalism.
And that is that's Rachel.
That's right.
Rachel is in the journalism club and with the newspaper in both high school and college. Mm-hmm. And so what is it that we will read the book to find out what changes Rachel? But for you, what was the moment where you said, yeah, okay, this isn't something I'm as comfortable with as I thought I would be?
Well, it was the murder of a classmate. So this is kind of the crux of the novel that's close to my own life. But that's kind of where the comparison ends. The girl that was murdered at my school, we were not friends. I had nothing like the relationship with her that Rachel and Allison have. But what I learned in the experience of her being murdered was that I didn't want to cover it. And I didn't think that when it came to real news issues that I could do them justice. You know, I had a moment where I needed to potentially go interview her roommates, and I realized I couldn't do it. I said, I value their privacy more than I value writing this story. And that was the moment where I realized, you know, that's not a journalist instinct at all. And so that was, you know, again, it was September and I knew I needed to stick out the year until June. But then after that, I was done.
But you knew you still wanted to write.
I wasn't sure. You know, when I decided that journalism was gone, I went to art school and painted full time pretty much for 10, 15 years, and really tried not to write because I felt that following in my father's footsteps would be a terrible idea. And then I just started writing because I couldn't not, and I enjoyed it too much. And then it just became a part of my everyday life. And here I am writing after all.
Do those pursuits ever battle each other in the sense of whether it be an artistic pursuit or a novelistic one?
Not really. I mean, only in time. I mean,
Right.
both just take an incredible amount of time. So it does sort of feel like having two full-time careers at once. But no, they harmonize really pretty well. You know, when I get stuck on one, I move on to the other, and then back and forth and back and forth I go.
When you say harmonize, in the context of how you were just using it, but harmonizing in subject too, right? I mean, it would seem like one would inform. I always ask journalists how if being a journalist makes you a better novelist, most journalists will admit that it does.
Yeah.
But as far as an artist, does that help in that pursuit or vice versa?
I think it does. I think the mindset for both is very much the same. In terms of just the attention to detail that is required for both. And so I learned that as a painter, but I use it as a writer just as much. And I had a painting professor who told me that something has to look good up close and far away. And that's something that I think about constantly with writing novels as well. You know, the sentence has to be good, and so does the book, and it needs to work, you know, finding a way to make things work on every level. And so, yeah, I think absolutely it makes me a better writer.
Do you get more of a chance to fine tune with writing than you do with art? I mean, and there's always sketching, of course, there's always pinpointing, but there, I mean, it is paint after all.
Yeah.
there is an everlasting point to it where you're committed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I fiddle much, much more as a writer than I do as a painter. And, you know, the thing that really surprised me when I started writing professionally was just how much more of a collaborative art it is. You know, when I'm painting and I show somebody the painting, nobody ever says, you know, I think maybe that where that green, I think you should make that a bit more blue. Nobody does that in painting. Whereas in writing, you know, your agent is reading the book. You're probably having some people read the book even before you give it to your agent, and then your editor's editing it. So everybody's got input. And it's so much more of a collaborative art. And I can't imagine the horror of putting out a book without having these reads, without having these notes. It would be not nearly as good a book. It's such an important stage.
And the writing, the rewriting, the drafts, that's a process that you enjoy.
It is, you know, it's always scary. It never stops being scary. But once I get into it, I really enjoy it.
Kate Russo is our guest. The name of the new novel is Until Allison, and it is now out from Putnam. That idea, and we talked about this at the beginning, but that idea of a very thin line between teen angst and an adult regret. And I asked the question because of the way that you use time in the novel, and even within chapters, of the going and back and forth, and becoming comfortable with that as a form of telling the story of one minute we're in the present, and then suddenly we are given a view as to how that moment came about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the things that I wanted to do with time in this book when I started was I wanted to bookend it actually with the two elections. I wanted the junior high years to be the electing of Obama. And then in 2016, obviously, we're looking at electing Trump for the first time. And that for me was the real sort of like, oh God, what a difference 8 years makes. You know, we were at you know, hope. Everything was about hope in 2008. And then in 2016, Rachel's graduating college. And this, you know, she wants a woman to become president. She thinks it's going to happen. And the world where that doesn't happen is a very, very scary one to her, rightly so. And so that, you know, that was kind of how I wanted to show the difference in time.
One of the things that I think you do beautifully, because this is such a part of life for so many people, and it's a weird part of life, but how both these characters, they leave high school and they both end up at the same college.
Yeah.
And yet it's a small college in a small town. And you know what? You could ignore just about anybody.
Yep. Yep. And that was certainly the case for me. I mean, I went to college with people that I went to high school with or junior high with, and I spent 4 years almost never crossing their path. You know, you people find their patch. And I think that's one of the things that's difficult for Rachel's, because everybody else seems to have found their group and their patch except for her, or that's the way it feels to her.
Yeah. Is that intentional, do you think? Or is that something that, in other words, you go out of your way to avoid those people? Or do you feel, okay, I've tried this once, it's not worth trying again? Or is there a new chapter to it of saying, I'm starting something new, I'll broaden my horizons and bring new people into my circle?
Yeah, I think with Allison, it's absolutely that Rachel's like, I'm not going there again. But in terms of everybody else, I think she mistakenly thought that everyone was going to sort of come to her and then she would choose who she liked. And it's like, she just doesn't really know how it works. She's too nervous to figure it out. And then by the time she realizes she's got no one in her mind, she feels like it's too late. And that's the mistake. And in senior year, she's still trying to figure out how to solve it.
You were talking about having a connection to the story in the sense of one of your classmates was murdered, but one of the questions there was the safety of the students and the women on campus, and you touch on that in the novel as well. I mean, it certainly seems like it has to be paramount in the discussion, and yet it's something that is so hard to think of as real that could actually happen.
Yeah, and when it did, that was something. When I first pitched this book to my agent, she said, you know, I think every young woman has a story like this. You know, we've all been around, we've all known at least tangentially a young woman who was murdered. And it's unfortunately, I think, an incredibly relatable thing. And I also think it's why there's like a plethora of dead girl books out there, which it was a big kind of thing for me as to whether or not I should enter this world, because I think it can be problematic. But at the end of the day, oftentimes when these women are killed, it doesn't make sense. And it was really, you know, yes, it's a thriller. Yes, we want to know who killed Allison. But what's pervasive through all of it is that it doesn't make sense, and the answer doesn't help. and that's how I felt. You know, when my classmate was murdered and we finally learned who murdered her, it didn't help. It didn't help any of us heal. I've had issues with feeling unsafe ever since this happened, and I think most young women do.
The name of the new book is Until Allison. It's a beautiful novel. It is published by Putnam. Kate Russo, what a delight to have you on the program. I thank you so much for being with us and for sharing with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Again, the name of the new book is Until Allison. It is published by Putnam. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at WAMC.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.